All right, are you ready to dive into some ancient secrets? Today, we're taking a deep dive into the Book of Esther.
And this isn't just going to be a retelling of the story.
No way. We've got some sources that are going to help us uncover all those hidden layers that most people miss.
Exactly. We'll be looking at the historical context, the literary structure, and even some of the theological debates surrounding this fascinating book.
There's a lot to unpack. Like, why is God seemingly absent from story?
That's a big one.
And was Esther really just a beauty queen, or was she more of a strategic power player?
Excellent question. And is any of this even true history, or is it a cleverly disguised work of fiction?
Ooh, good one. It's like a historical mystery wrapped in a biblical drama.
You hit the nail on the head. To answer these questions, we need to understand the world of ancient Persia. And for that, we're going to be drawing some insights from Dr. Elaine Phillips, a scholar who really brings this period to life.
Perfect. So paint us a picture. What was it like in the Persian Empire under King Xerxes?
Think opulent, extravagant, a bit over the top. Imagine massive feasts overflowing with wine and a king who, shall we say, enjoyed showing off his power. But even in this world of luxury, things could get pretty dramatic.
Okay, let's unpack this drama. The story kicks off with Xerxes throwing this massive party, right? Like,
yeah,
the biggest bash the ancient world had ever seen.
Exactly. And in the middle of this party, he demands his queen, Vashti, to parade her beauty in front of all his drunken guests. Imagine the audacity.
Oh, wow. That's not going to go over well.
It didn't. Vashti, to her credit, refuses to be objectified. This sets off a chain reaction, ending with Vashti being deposed and the search for a new queen beginning.
Enter Esther, a young Jewish woman living in the Persian capital.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously she's beautiful, but is there more to her than meets the eye?
That's the million-dollar question. On the surface, she might seem like just another pretty face in the king's harem. But if we dig deeper into the text, we see hints of a woman who's incredibly sharp, resourceful, and maybe even a bit manipulative.
Hold on. I have to point out the elephant in the room here. God is totally MIA in this story. That's pretty unique, even for the Bible. Does that absence mean anything?
It's a great question, and it's one that scholars have been wrestling with for centuries.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder what's going on here.
Right. Some see it as evidence that Esther is simply a historical novel, a work of fiction that uses a biblical setting to explore universal themes.
So like a parable with a historical backdrop.
Exactly. But others argue that the absence of God actually adds a layer of complexity to the story. It forces us to look for God's hand in the subtle details, in the coincidences, and in the seemingly random events that shape the narrative.
So we're talking about reading between the lines. Give us an example of one of these coincidences.
Well, think about the king's insomnia. At a crucial moment, he can't sleep and decides to have the Royal Chronicles read to him. Just a random whim, right?
Yeah, sounds pretty mundane.
But it's during this random reading that he discovers that Mordecai, Esther's cousin, had previously foiled an assassination plot against him. This seemingly insignificant event sets in motion a chain of events that will ultimately save the Jewish people from annihilation.
Wow. It does make you wonder what we might be missing in our own lives.
Hmm.
Do we always recognize when things might not be just chance? Or do we sometimes miss God working behind the scenes? I know I do.
It's a challenge, isn't it? To discern the hand of God in the everyday, the seemingly mundane. But Esther invites us to pay attention, to look for those subtle signs of divine providence that might be all around us.
Okay, back to Esther. The common view, I think, is she's just a beauty queen who uses her looks to save her people. But you're not suggesting there's more to it.
Absolutely. Dr. Phillips makes a compelling case for Esther as a strategic mastermind. She doesn't just rely on her beauty. She carefully cultivates relationships, bides her time, and chooses her moments carefully. She understands the power dynamics at play and uses them to her advantage.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Give me a specific example of how Esther plays this chess game.
Well, think about the way she reveals her Jewish identity to the king. She doesn't just blurt it out.
Right. That would probably not have gone well.
Not at all. Instead, she orchestrates a series of private banquets, gradually winning over the king's favor before dropping the bombshell. It's a calculated risk, and it pays off brilliantly.
So she's playing the long game here, not just reacting to the situation.
Exactly. She's thinking several steps ahead, anticipating the consequences of her actions, and maneuvering herself into a position of influence. She's a woman who understands the art of persuasion and uses it masterfully.
This is giving me a whole new perspective on Esther. She's not a damsel in distress, but a shrewd political player working within a system designed to silence her. It makes you wonder, is she a feminist hero? Or is she a more complicated figure? We'll have to unpack that later.
It's a fascinating debate, and one that speaks to the enduring power of Esther's story. She defies easy categorization, and that's part of what makes her so compelling.
This brings us to Mordecai. He's often seen as the wise protector, but is that the whole story? His refusal to bow to Haman seems to kick off this whole mess, right?
Yes, and how one act of defiance has sparked a lot of debate. Was Mordecai motivated purely by religious conviction, or was there an element of pride, of refusing to submit to a man he saw as beneath him?
Ooh, that's a good point. It's not as straightforward as it seems.
Right. And let's not forget, he's the one who sends Esther into the harem in the first place, a dangerous and potentially compromising situation for a young Jewish woman.
That's true. It makes you think about the tough choices people face, especially in a situation like theirs. Have you ever felt like you had to choose between your values and your safety?
It's a dilemma that resonates across time, isn't it? And Mordecai's character forces us to confront those uncomfortable questions about compromise and the gray areas of morality.
So we've got a king with a questionable sense of judgment, a queen who's more cunning than she appears, and a protector figure with his own set of complexities. This is shaping up to be a story that's much more than just a simple tale of good versus evil.
Exactly. And that's what we'll delve into further in the next part of our deep dive, exploring the deeper message of Purim, the debate over the historicity of the book, and ultimately what it all means for us today.
All right, I'm ready to dive deeper into this story. We've established that Esther is more than just a pretty face, and Mordecai's actions aren't always so black and white. So where do we go from here?
Well, let's shift our focus to Purim, the Jewish holiday that celebrates the events in Esther.
Yeah, Purim. It's a pretty festive holiday, right? Lots of costumes and parties.
It is, but it's not just about commemorating a historical event. It's about understanding the deeper message embedded within the story.
Okay, give us the Purim lowdown. What's the significance beyond, you know, the historical event?
Purim celebrates the Jewish people's survival against seemingly insurmountable odds. It reminds us that even when things seem hopeless, there's always a chance for a dramatic reversal of fortune. It's a reminder that God can work through unexpected means to bring about deliverance.
I'm sensing some parallels to Passover here.
Aww.
Another holiday about deliverance. Am I on the right track?
You are. Both Purim and Passover commemorate moments when the Jewish people were on the brink of annihilation and were miraculously saved. They both highlight the recurring cycle of oppression and liberation that has marked Jewish history. And interestingly, Purim is celebrated just before Passover, almost like a prelude to the main event.
That's fascinating. It's like these holidays are in conversation with each other, building upon these themes of resilience and hope. It also brings up a point we touched on earlier. Esther and Mordecai living in exile still managed to impact events in Persia. What does this say about being a minority in a foreign land?
It's a powerful message of agency, isn't it? It suggests that even in exile, it's possible to maintain your identity and values, to resist oppression, and to make a difference. Esther and Mordecai utilize their positions within the Persian system to protect their people. They show us that assimilation doesn't have to equal powerlessness.
That resonates even today, especially for groups navigating different cultures and power structures. It's a reminder that we always have a choice in how we respond to difficult situations. But let's go back to Haman for a moment. He's pretty much the textbook villain, driven by hatred and jealousy. What's the takeaway from his character?
Haman represents the very real threat of anti-Semitism that has persisted throughout history. His plot to annihilate the Jews is chilling, and the text doesn't shy away from depicting the brutality of his intentions. It's a stark reminder of the consequences of unchecked hatred and intolerance.
It's definitely a sobering reminder that these ancient stories still hold relevance today. We can't afford to ignore the lessons they offer, especially when it comes to confronting injustice. But there's also a lot of humor woven into this story, particularly in the way King Xerxes is portrayed. He comes across as a bit of a buffoon at times, easily manipulated by those around him. Why do you think the author chose to portray him this way?
Some scholars believe it's a deliberate attempt to satirize the Persian court and the nature of power itself. By portraying Xerxes as clueless and easily swayed, the author subtly undermines his authority and highlights the absurdity of absolute power.
So it's a way of saying even the most powerful figures are flawed and susceptible to manipulation. They're not infallible gods, but human beings subject to the same weaknesses as everyone else.
Exactly. And that subversive element is one of the things that makes Esther so compelling. It's a story that challenges authority, questions assumptions, and encourages us to see things from a different perspective.
And let's be honest, some of those scenes are just plain funny. Like when Haman is tricked into parading Mordecai through the streets, thinking he's being honored, only to be completely humiliated. Talk about dramatic irony.
It's classic storytelling. Not only is it entertaining, but it also reinforces the theme of reversal, showing how those who seek to elevate themselves often end up being brought low.
Speaking of reversals, the book is packed with them. From Haman's downfall to the ultimate deliverance of the Jewish people, it reminds us that things can change dramatically and unexpectedly. But where does God fit into all of this? He's still notably absent from the text.
That's where the concept of divine providence comes in. Even though God isn't explicitly mentioned, his presence is subtly woven throughout the story, guiding events towards a dramatic reversal of fortune. It's like a hidden picture puzzle, where you have to look closely to see the image emerge. In Esther, you have to look closely to see God's hand at work.
It's like those choose-your-own-adventure books, where you have to make the right choices to reach the best ending. But in Esther, God is subtly influencing those choices, leading to the ultimate triumph of good over evil. It makes you wonder how often we might be experiencing divine intervention without even realizing it.
It's a tantalizing question, isn't it? And it's one that the book leaves open for us to ponder. It invites us to consider the interplay between human agency and divine providence and to recognize that even in the most chaotic of circumstances, there might be a larger plan at play.
All right, so we've got this mystery author, possible historical discrepancies, and a whole lot of symbolism packed into this story. But before we wrap up, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier. Dr. Phillips pointed out a connection between Esther and the Exodus story, right?
Yeah, it's a fascinating parallel that adds another layer of meaning to the book of Esther. Remember, the Exodus is the foundational story of the Jewish people. It's the story of their deliverance from slavery in Egypt.
Right, right.
And in Esther, we see a similar theme of deliverance, but this time it's from annihilation. With Haman playing the role of Pharaoh.
Seeking to wipe out the Jewish people.
Exactly.
It's like history repeating itself, but with different actors on the stage. But how does this connection to the Exodus enhance our understanding of Esther?
Well, it elevates the conflict from a personal vendetta to a cosmic battle between good and evil. By tapping into the collective memory of the Exodus, the author of Esther frames the story within a larger narrative of God's ongoing struggle against oppression and injustice.
So it's not just about Haman's hatred for Mordecai or the Jewish people, it's about a deeper struggle that transcends individual characters and historical events.
Exactly. And that connection to the Exodus also reinforces the theme of God's faithfulness to his people. Just as God delivered the Israelites from slavery in Egypt, he also delivers the Jews from Haman's plot in Persia. It's a reminder that God's promises hold true across generations, and that even in the darkest of times, deliverance is possible.
It's like a thread of hope woven through Jewish history, connecting these moments of crisis and triumph. And it makes me think about how we, as individuals, can find strength and inspiration from the stories of those who came before us, those who faced their own, for such a time as this, moments and emerged victorious.
It's a powerful reminder that we're not alone in our struggles. The challenges we face today may be different from those faced by Esther and Mordecai, but the underlying themes of courage, resilience, and faith in the face of adversity are timeless and universal.
So what's the ultimate takeaway for our listeners? What can we learn from the book of Esther that we can apply to our own lives, even if we don't live in ancient Persia or face threats of annihilation?
I think one of the most important lessons is the importance of recognizing those hidden signs of God's presence,
yeah,
even in the midst of chaos and uncertainty.
Even when it feels like God is totally absent?
Yes. Even then, it's about trusting that even when we don't see the full picture, God is at work, orchestrating events, and ultimately guiding us towards a greater purpose.
It's like having a backstage pass to a grand production, but we're only allowed to peek through a tiny hole in the curtain.
Yeah.
We might only see glimpses of the action, but we have to trust that the director knows what they're doing.
Exactly. And that trust requires faith, a willingness to believe that even in the darkest of times, there's a light shining just beyond our immediate vision. And sometimes that light shines through the actions of ordinary people who rise to the occasion, just like Esther and Mordecai.
It's empowering, isn't it? Knowing that we all have the potential to be part of something bigger than ourselves to make a difference in the world, even if it seems like our actions are small or insignificant.
Absolutely. And that's where the message of Esther really resonates. It's a call to action, an invitation to step into our own for such a time as this moments, and to use our gifts, our voices, and our resources to fight for justice, to stand up for what's right, and to be a force for good in the world.
So it's not just about passively reading an ancient story. It's about letting that story ignite a fire within us, inspiring us to live differently, to see the world with new eyes, and to act with courage and conviction.
And that's the true beauty of the Book of Esther. It's a story that challenges us, inspires us, and ultimately empowers us to live lives that reflect the hidden but ever-present hand of God at work in the world.
Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into the Book of Esther. From the opulent palaces of ancient Persia to the depths of theological debate, we've uncovered hidden layers of meaning and hopefully challenged ourselves to see this ancient story in a new light.
And more importantly, perhaps this deep dive has inspired us to look at our own lives and the world around us with fresh eyes.
Maybe even to recognize our own for such a time as this moment, and to step up with courage and faith. Thanks for joining us.